We now have the first feature. Skye Robinson of the Evening News marked the week of Armistice Day by remembering the fate of the crew from the 448th East Anglian Bomb Group, whose lives were cut tragically short. The feature is read by Rosemary Scott.
And the men of the East Anglian-based 448th Bomb Group are more than just how many missions they flew. They had interests, hopes, family, future plans. World War II changed everything. For those lucky enough to make it home, all that they knew and hoped for was different. For those not so lucky, all that was left were memories for their loved ones to hold on to. As we mark Remembrance Day, we at the newly formed group, Stories of the 448th, wish to reflect on the tales of those from the group who flew B-24H Repulsor. 10 young men brought together from different parts of the USA for a common cause. Some had brothers also serving in the war. Some were only children. And some had children they never had a chance to meet. Above all, those men never got the chance to fulfill their hopes and futures. Classed as a replacement crew, they left New York on February the 18th, 1844, to join the 715th Bomb Squadron at Station 146 in Seething. As a crew, they flew only twice before their fatal mission, on April the 22nd, 1944. The mission. On April 22nd, 1944, members of the 448th were sent to raid Ham, Germany, a very important target. What was scheduled as an early morning takeoff eventually ended up happening in late afternoon. The squadron had never done a deep penetration mission into Germany so late in the day. This delay would mean the bombers would be arriving back in the dark. Only a few men had experience of nighttime piloting. Despite this, the mission went ahead. As one of the 26 aircraft from the 448th, Eugene Pulsifer and his crew were assigned aircraft 41-288-43 Repulsor and were positioned at the back left of the wing of the squadron, one of the last aircraft to take off. They hit Ham just after 7:30 p.m., causing lots of damage to the marshalling yard. But as they were heading home in a westerly direction towards the setting sun, German fighters seized their opportunity. Three or four ME-410s from the Luftwaffe unit KG-51 Edelweiss began to take chase. At 9:38 p.m., the formation had reached the Suffolk coast, unaware they were being tailed. Keeping low, the ME-410s were well hidden in the darkness, using lights from the B-24s for guidance. The formation didn't see them, and radar couldn't pick them out from the group. It was like the Luftwaffe was never there. It was a well-thought-out plan of attack. At around 10 p.m., the formation was close to Great Yarmouth. Feeling safe, they turned on their recognition lights and identification friend or foe equipment. They also fired the colour of the day flares so anti-aircraft guns would not fire at them in error. Ahead of Repulsor was aircraft 42-52608, piloted by First Lieutenant Cherry Pitts. In an act of friendly fire, he was hit by British gunners below. Pitt's aircraft quickly caught fire and plunged into the North Sea. All men on board perished. Afterwards, the British gunners reported they had fired at an intruder that was stalking the formation. The Luftwaffe attack had begun and Repulsor was hit. Local boy Henry Bennett and his father witnessed this attack. They'd heard the B-24s coming in from the sea and had gone outside to see what was happening. What they witnessed was the ME-410's cannon ripping into a B-24. the aircraft quickly caught fire and rolled on its side into a dive. The wing broke away and the plane crashed into the marshlands of Kessingland, about a quarter of a mile from the coast. Small fragments of repulsor landed in Henry's garden. By 10:40 p.m., the attack was over. Three B-24s belonging to the 448th were shot down by a combination of enemy fire and friendly fire. One aircraft crash-landed, and four were piled up at the end of the runway as a result of the night's actions. One of the ME-410s was shot down, one was lost in the North Sea, and others made it back to Germany. Another local witness to the attack, John Blores, was so affected by what he saw that he started to raise money for a memorial stone dedicated to men lost that night. In November 2009, Kessingland laid the stone over small pieces of wreckage from the plane, and a memorial service was held in 2010, with crew family members invited. Unfortunately, the volcanic eruption in Iceland grounded flights, meaning 9 of the 10 families couldn't make the dedication. But the event was replanned in 2011, with all families in attendance. It took 66 years to finally piece the whole truth of what happened to the crew together. Now, at least, they can finally rest at peace.
Thank you, Rosemary. And that's it for part one of Chatterbox this week. So it's goodbye from me, Alison Aplin, and also from Don Cleaver. Tim Peters and Jane Pratt are now going to take over for part two, which will include Information Desk, more news stories, and a second feature.